COVID-19 vaccines are now available to all New Yorkers 16 and older. Help us get one shot closer to a COVID-free NYC. Make an appointment today. Visit nyc.gov/vaccinefinder or call 877-VAX4NYC.
Talkline Network Radio, America's longest-running Jewish broadcast network, the voice of the Jewish community.
What are we gonna do with our children? What are we gonna do to show we care? How are we gonna be there for our children when they feel that life has just not been that fair?
Here is your host.
Good evening and welcome back to Mask's weekly radio show on Family Matters. Mask, Mothers and Fathers Align, saving kids, kids of all ages and all stages for all mental health issues, including school issues, addictions. If you know somebody that needs a referral for a therapist, an inpatient or outpatient program, clinic, rehab, maybe for a parent support group, please call 718-758-0400. Again, I'll repeat the number. Maybe you want to jot it down for yourself or a loved one, your neighbors, or someone you usually would sit next to in shul. Our confidential helpline number is 718-758-0400. Tonight, I am continuing the conversation with Dr. Jacob Friedman, who is a forensic psychiatrist. He's psychotherapy, psychopharmacologist consultant. He does residence training at Harvard Medical School, board certified psychiatrist in America and in Israel. I want to welcome you on again. Last week's show was wonderful in the conversation tonight. Thank you, Dr. Friedman, for making the time for coming on tonight.
Mrs. Kleppen, thank you so much for having me. And again, Groyser Yasher Koach for all of the tremendous work that you are doing and your tremendous organization, MASK, all the amazing work you're doing fighting the stigma of mental health and getting people of all ages the help that they need to be successful.
Thank you, my wonderful staff. Thank you. So, Dr. Friedman, we're talking about seeing a psychiatrist. And I wonder, maybe there are those that didn't listen to our show last week. You can listen to it if you go onto our website, www.massparents.org. I want to talk about, you know, the pandemic, what's going on around the world. What percentage of people experience mental illness?
That's a great question, because I think that while we've seen a lot more people struggling over the past year and a lot more people coming forward with their struggles over the past year, a good general rule is that 1 in 3 people will experience a challenge with mental health and or substance abuse at some point in their life. And that's frankly a lot of people. 1 in 3 means that if you look to your left and you look to your right and then you look at yourself really hard, that you probably know someone who's experienced a challenge with a mental health issue at some point in their career.
Absolutely. You know, we have so many parents that ask on the helpline, is there anything that one can do to prevent mental illness?
Certainly. In general, mental illness is caused by what's called the two-hit hypothesis. whereby there is a genetic predisposition to mental health issues, and then there are environmental triggers. Now, none of us can fix our genes, which means that I'm bald thanks to my maternal grandfather, Lava Shalom, but we can affect the amount of stress that we experience over our life to some degree, in that people who don't abuse drugs and alcohol, specifically staying away from marijuana and other psychedelic drugs, people who exercise and eat a healthy diet, people who get psychotherapy and supportive services at an early stage are much less likely to develop serious mental illness challenges at some point later in their life. And that's why it's so important to really identify or at risk based on a family history or a traumatic event, and to meet with mental health professionals earlier in the game in order to develop preventative strategies to stop the progression of potential mental illness.
You know, doctor, we talk about three meals a day and exercise and the importance of exercise to prevent mental illness. Like you said, meet with a psychiatrist, a therapist early in the game so that you can help prevent it from becoming a real big issue. So let's talk about why exercise is so important.
Certainly. So we know as a field that a healthy body leads to a healthy mind. And whereas many mental illness conditions can be worsened by chronic systemic inflammation and conditions such as obesity, heart disease, and diabetes, that exercise prevents these conditions and therefore can help. In addition to that, exercise is found in studies to be a great antidepressant, a great treatment of ADHD, a very good treatment for PTSD, in addition to other existing treatments. So exercise can really be a big part of a person's treatment plan in that it keeps them healthy and can, along with medications and therapy, work towards preventing serious mental health issues. Exercises, again, not in place of other psychiatric treatments, but together with other psychiatric treatments, can be a very important part of a person's treatment plan. And there have been good studies to show that exercising, even just 20 minutes to half an hour a day, can have a robust antidepressant effect. So this is good stuff.
Yeah, I do want to add that, you know, young adults, ADHD or aggressive behavior, martial arts, boxing, there's so many different kinds of exercise. Not everybody loves going to the gym.
Certainly. I should say that anything that gives you a good schvitz and makes you sweaty is certainly a positive thing.
So it's not a luxury when, you know, there's so many expenses out there for, you know, families, especially today, where so many people lost jobs and during the pandemic. But exercise, really, when you have the genetic component, and you're struggling with some mental illness diagnosis, exercise is not a luxury.
No, it's really a necessity. And I think, again, you don't have to join a gym. You can go for a brisk walk. You can go for a run. You can grab a basketball and go down to the nearest court with a couple of your buddies. Exercise is very much an important thing to help with sleep, to help with focus, to help with energy, to really just prevent mental health challenges from getting more out of control.
bike riding as well.
I used to be a suburban mountain biking expert when I was in the States, so I'm a big bike riding fan as well.
Okay. So, you know, evidence-based treatment, not everybody understands why that's so important. I'd like you to explain to my listeners what evidence-based treatment actually means. And what are some of the evidence-based therapies that could be helpful, please?
Sure, that's a great question, Mrs. Clapman. Evidence-based treatment means a treatment that has a scientific basis that supports its usage. For example, aspirin has been proven to be successful through studies that include tens of thousands of patients over decades in preventing and treating heart disease. In psychiatry and the treatment of mental illness, there are studies that show that certain medications are very effective. There are other studies that show that certain medications are not effective. There are studies that show that certain therapies, talk therapies like cognitive behavioral therapy or dialectical behavioral therapy, are very, very helpful. There are studies that show that certain therapies are not helpful. So when we're talking about an evidence-based treatment, we're talking about something that has been studied in a rigorous scientific format by professionals in the academic field who do not have any sort of bias. They're not paid off by drug companies or paid off by any other party, and they produce objective evidence showing what is the best means of treating depression, anxiety, PTSD, bipolar disorder, schizophrenia. I think that many people in our community are at risk of seeking out treatments that are not evidence-based. For example, homeopathic medicine, for example, certain Ayurvedic practices and practices in Chinese medicine that don't have a robust, strong research that shows that it's effective for the treatment. A lot of things in our community, in the Orthodox Jewish community, show that treatment is based on word of mouth. And if somebody feels that something was helpful, then they'll recommend it to other people, whether or not it has a strong scientific background. And I think that that's a big challenge that our community faces, both on a religious level and also on a practical level. So there are some medications that have been around for decades that are shown to be very good in the treatment of depression, bipolar disorder, anxiety disorders, OCD, schizophrenia. And then there's a lot of snake oil medicine shows out there, things that don't have any scientific basis, all sorts of strange vitamin concoctions and herbal remedies that are not based on any scientific validity. And as a community, we really need to encourage people to follow the best medical practices, because that's not only what's safe for individuals who are receiving treatment, but it's also halacha. There's Jewish law to suggest that seeking out a certified high-quality treatment is a requirement according to Jewish law.
Absolutely. You're bringing up medication, which, like you say, some parents, you know, say, I want to put my child on meds, and some say, no, I'll do anything not to put them on the meds. And we hear such negative stories from parents about kids that, you know, their family members, their spouses or whatever, that have a bad reaction to many meds. So, I mean, there's both ways, but just, I want you to explain the benefits of how psychiatric meds can be helpful in one's life.
Certainly. So I think you bring up the very important point that there are pros and cons to treatment with medication. There is the positive effect that a medication can have in terms of relieving symptoms and allowing a person to return to a stable state where they're happy, productive, healthy, and able to engage in the community and in their family life. And then we have the cons. We have the side effects that are potentially associated with different medications. And we also have the stigma of taking a medication treatment, which is in many cases the biggest con of treatment, because people are very afraid of, what if I have to reveal to other people that I'm taking a medication? Or what will everybody say if I'm taking a medication? Or does this mean I'm crazy now that I'm taking a medication? Or does this mean that I'm a bad parent if my child is taking a medication? And these are very big questions and real fear people have. I think that the most important thing for people to keep in mind is that not only are there pros and cons of taking a medication treatment, but there are also pros and cons of not taking a medication treatment. For a person who needs treatment with a medication, at the point where their behavior is deviant, at the point where there's dysfunction and sorrows in their life, to avoid treatment can be momish abuse. It can be really a nightmare. The patient who desperately needs treatment with a psychiatric medication to avoid a life-saving treatment. Now, I think that it's very important to bring up that psychiatric medications are not curative on their own in many cases. Most people who do take a medication will find that this is a part of their recovery story, in addition to things like exercise, healthy eating, good sleep hygiene, getting enough sleep at night, in addition to having a good therapist, a case manager, a supportive family that's working together to get them the help that they need. But for every person who has a bad experience with medication, there are many people who have good experiences with medication. And for every person that's nervous about a side effect, we should just say it very frankly. Doctor will be meticulous in discussing the risks and the benefits of treatment with a psychiatric medication, and should explain potential risk factors and things to look for. And in watching for signs and symptoms of a side effect, oftentimes these things can be nipped in the bud and prevented before a serious side effect occurs. So that's a very important point. While there are many potential side effects, a good treatment team and a very knowledgeable family will be meticulous and work hard to be aware should any signs of a side effect begin to arise.
So let's talk about psychiatric medication that parents are worried about being addictive. Kids sell their meds, their ADD meds, their Ritalin. If you could just quickly explain about that.
Yes, certainly. So I think we should just first say, why are so many people hearing bad stories about psychiatric medications? And the answer is that it's very good news. Bad stories about psychiatric treatment are things that people are excited to talk about. They're sensational. And for everybody who experience, again, there's so many who have good experiences that have nothing to say beyond, yeah, I took the medicine and I did fantastic. I took the medicine and thank God it helped my depression to go away. I took the medicine and thank God it helped me from relapsing and ending up with psychotic symptoms again and getting back in the hospital. Thank God I've been taking my lithium for 30 years and I haven't needed to be in the hospital in 30 years. So I think that, again, for every bad story, there's so many good stories that you never hear about because, frankly, you don't even know who's taking medicine because they're just silently doing fantastic with their treatment. Are medications addictive? Certainly there are some psychiatric medications that are addictive. As you mentioned, certain stimulant medications can be abused and misused, specifically benzodiazepines like Xanax, Clonix, Valium, can be abused and misused. Now, a good physician and an involved family can work together to come up with a plan to prevent the misuse of medications, and using and reevaluating these medications on a monthly basis can also prevent the risks of diversion and addiction by assessing, are these medications being used safely? Are they being taken as prescribed as opposed to on a here and there basis? Are they being monitored by the doctor for signs and symptoms of addiction over time? These are things that family members can really do a great job of communicating and working as a team together with the prescribing psychiatrist.
Dr. Friedman, help parents when it comes to stigma-free. We must get the message out there. We have to get people talking. What do you want to say to parents about working towards stigma-free?
So the most important thing is that every family has somebody. There's not a family that doesn't have somebody who's struggling with a mental health issue. In our community, Canine Horror, many families have 8-10 kids. There's not a chance that there's nobody in the family, in the extended family, that doesn't have a challenge with mental health issues. And when we ignore this, when we sweep it under the rug, we prevent prompt treatment and diagnosis. And by pushing off treatment and diagnosis, it makes it harder to get the good treatment that we need. When we go ahead and push off having an appointment with the doctor, push off treatment with medication when the doctor feels that it's necessary, when we prevent our loved ones from accessing the social services that they need, this is what leads to terrible things like hospitalizations and, heaven forbid, suicide and violence. No patient with mental health is violent or suicidal until they've reached an advanced stage that could have been prevented with more acute treatment at an earlier stage. So when we work hard at decreasing the stigma, people are willing, able, and better understand what it means to get help fast. And it's so much easier to climb back up when you're only 2 feet down as opposed to when you're at the bottom of the Grand Canyon. So it's so important, once again, to normalize this. There is not a family that has not had a challenge with mental health. And I say this as a psychiatrist who has treated Hasidic rebbes, who has treated famous athletes, who has treated politicians, doctors, lawyers, surgeons, dentists, accountants, plumbers, electricians, teachers, garbage men, from the top to the bottom. Mental illness does not discriminate. Mental illness does not care how chashuv, how wealthy, how yichastig your family is. Mental illness wants you to get the treatment you need as fast as possible to be healthy and return to your life.
and can lead a normal life.
Of course. Again, as I said, I have plenty of patients who are politicians and doctors and lawyers who, thank goodness, are doing fantastic. You wouldn't know it. And that's what really fighting the stigma is about, is knowing that normal, regular people also have these challenges, and that by getting high-quality treatment, we're able to return to a place of functionality, engagement in our family, and being a productive member of the community and society at large.
Dr. Friedman, parents struggle when their loved ones don't want to take their meds. So what do you want to say to those parents? How, maybe to give them the language on how to speak to their loved ones about the medication much needed?
So I think that it's so important to realize that when parents have worked hard to take away the stigma of taking a medication, the children will feel it themselves. And when parents say this is a medical condition that requires medical treatment and God willing, you'll be fantastic, then the children will really feel and internalize that. And the children won't be affected by the negative stigma of taking a treatment. And on that note, I want to bring up just one last thought, because I know we're getting towards the end of the show, Mrs. Klatman. But oftentimes people will ask me, does davening help? And the answer is, you betcha it helps, because there's nothing as good as the power of positive thinking. We can say it in Yiddish, trach gut v'zayin gut. We can say it in Hebrew, tachshov tov yeyeh tov. We can say it in American, thinking positively has a positive effect, because it puts us in a good, supportive, open mindset where we're able to express true, unconditional love to the people around us, and where we're more open to change and to be flexible, to be the kind of people that we need to be to support our loved ones. And I know that that's the motto, so you might as well just say it.
Well, thank you so much for coming on again tonight, and I really appreciate it, and I hope to have you on again in the near future.
I'd be honored. Just call me.
Thank you, and I want to wish you and all my listeners a wonderful evening, a beautiful Shabbos, and a beautiful Shavuos, and let's all just stay safe and be happy, and always remember, hang in, hold on, hug tight.
Hug tight.
Please, yeah, virtually for now, right? Yeah. But if you want to sponsor one of our shows or our programs, please go online to www.maskparents.org. Help us continue helping family. Tonight's program is Le'iloi Nishmas, my dear father, Leibel Bistritzky, whose yahrzeit is this Shabbos. So, Yehuda Leib ben Mordechai, thank you and have a good night.
You're right. You should know why the COVID-19 vaccines are safe. This is why. Strict safety standards were followed. The vaccines were tested on thousands of volunteers, and the highest scientific standards were followed. Severe allergic reactions are extremely rare. You will be observed by medical staff in case you have an allergic reaction. Millions have been vaccinated safely. So far, tens of millions of people in the U.S. have been vaccinated safely. The vaccines save lives. The vaccines prevent severe illness, hospitalizations, and deaths from COVID-19. So yes, you're right. You should be sure the COVID-19 vaccines are safe. With strict safety standards followed, few allergic reactions, millions vaccinated safely, plus the prevention of severe illness, you can be sure the COVID-19 vaccines are safe and save lives. Learn more at nyc.gov/COVID-vaccine.
Ow. Are you interested in hosting your own radio show and podcast, or perhaps a TV program? TalkLine Network can help you get on the air from 1 hour weekly to 24 hours a day. Ideal for ethnic, foreign language, medical, business, and religious broadcasting. We also have full-time radio stations for lease, as well as FM HD channels. For more information, please call 212-769-1925. That's 212-769-1925. Or email zevbrenner@gmail.com.